Hello, everyone, and welcome into a special Tuesday episode of Finsider Radio, the Jake and Josh Show. I am your host, Josh Houts. You can follow me on Twitter at Houts, H-O-U-T-Z. I am joined by my co-host, one half of the tag team champions of the world, the one, the only, Jake Mendel. You can follow him on Twitter at J-M-E-N-D-E-L-94. Before we get into the podcast, I have to ask, Jake, how's it going today, man?
I'm good. It's hot, it's muggy, it's a little miserable, but I mean, I guess that's just kind of life, right? When you really think about it. No, I'm kidding. But it's super hot. I'm hoping it rains, but it's not looking like it. The Heat got swept. The Red Sox are looking okay, so I got that going for me. But overall, I mean, it's still just waiting around for the Dolphins to come around and do something. And obviously, I just mean whether it's mandatory mini camps, which begin June 15th and run to the 17th, or if it's just spring training. Yeah. If it's the preseason, the summer camps, I mean, I'm all here for that. I'll absorb any news that comes out and overreact to it just as we should.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's honestly what it is. I mean, that's why we all joined Twitter. That's why we all got into what we do. I mean, it's because we just devour all of this information and we spin it however we damn well please. So it's a lot to talk about and I'm excited, man.
And so basically, I just kind of hinted at it, the mandatory mini camp. That's like the last little bit before we fully turn the page to the 2021-22 season. Obviously, the draft and free agency, all that things have happened. But in terms of the NFL's calendar year, that is all part of last year. So the mandatory mini camps that are taking place next week are, quote unquote, the end of phase three of the offseason. And the offseason is split up into three parts. And so if phase three is coming to an end, that means we're about to enter the preseason, right? So what I wanted to do here, Josh, is I wanted us to get ahead of all the storylines, what everyone's going to be talking about, because outside of the mini camps, and I'm sure we're going to hear some things, like today we actually just heard that the Dolphins will have joint practices with the Falcons, so that'll be pretty exciting. But everything for the next month is going to be straight up speculation because nothing else is really going to be happening. So I wanted to speculate about what we'll be speculating about by breaking out the top 20 storylines we're going to have in this awkward phase of going from the end of the 2020 season to the beginning of the 2021 season and what the specific storylines will be for the Miami Dolphins as we go to those training camps, as fans pile into the bleachers in Davie, Florida, and they're, you know, zooming in on their phones. I've even seen fans there with binoculars trying to see whether it's George Godsey holding the NFL or the offensive play calling sheet, or if it's Xavier Howard is even there. These are just some of the things we're going to talk about here. So Josh, let's start right there. I think one of the biggest things that we're yet to talk about, and it's like this conversation is like a pitcher throwing a no-hitter. Everybody knows something's happening, but you just don't know where it's going to end up. And that's Xavier Howard and those contract talks. Because I think we've heard 3-4 different times that Howard's not happy with his contract. He is kind of open to sitting out until he's the highest paid player on the Miami Dolphins. He is currently slated to make about 2.5 mil less than Byron Jones this year. And you can understand where his gripe is coming from. But Josh, here we are June 8th. We haven't heard much about this. And, you know, the camp's coming up. That is where Howard would be able to, you know, make his biggest statement, because he could have here, but he's so far shown that, you know, he's sick and professional through whatever he disagrees about in terms of contracts.
You're right. And I mean, I think the prime example is Aaron Rodgers. We see him sitting out camp. You know, there were huge circus now surrounding that. So, you know, we can sit here and speculate whether, you know, Xavier Howard truly wants to have a new contract. I mean, let's be honest. He wants to get paid like the number one corner in football, and he obviously wants to be the highest paid corner on his team. I mean, he just hit double digits interceptions for the first time in how long in Miami Dolphins history. So, I mean, this is that player that, again, that you can build that defense around. So, you're right. Fans are going to be there with their binoculars. They're going to be zooming in to try to see what's going on there. But you have written here, he accounts, Jake, for 7% of Miami's total cap space this and next year. And, I mean, that's a pretty big chunk of money. And, again, this is a player who has tons of speculation surrounding him. Dolphin fans, you know, every other week seem to want to move him, but he wants to get paid, and this is definitely that big, you know, looming cloud over training camp.
I have to wonder if we haven't seen anything too dramatic about this, just based on the salary cap. Obviously, that sounds like a no-duh type of statement, but in the sense of playing with money this year is different than it's going to be with playing money next year in terms of how much the salary is going to balloon. I think it's already relative in the area of $30 million is going to be popped on that salary cap next year. So I wonder if they've even had conversations in terms of we're going to make cuts in training camp. We're going to get something done this year, and the Dolphins push to get something done this year, because once cornerbacks start asking for more money next year, it's going to absolutely blow these numbers out of the water. So like the Dolphins did the first time around with Xavier Howard, I think they jumped on the bandwagon early, and they actually got an incredibly team-friendly deal. And again, the negative side of that is now Xavier Howard wants a new contract. I mean, even if, you know, Howard got what he wanted the first time around, I think we'd still be at this point, which is okay. Howard deserves to get his bag. I think the Dolphins are just so much of a better team with Xavier Howard on the field that he deserves to be, you know, 7% of the total cap. I mean, Byron Jones, like I just said, is just above him. I think he's at like 7.2, 7.3. But I mean, giving Howard that extra little bit, led the league in interceptions last year, and I could probably count off the top of my head four or five different times, whether it was Kyle Van Noy jumping in front of an easy interception he had. Obviously, Van Noy didn't really know what was going on. He went for the interception himself, took the ball away. Or I think there was two or three. I think Jacksonville might have had one where Howard just straight up dropped it. And I'm not trying to say that ifs and buts and all that stuff, because 10 interceptions is still fantastic, but this guy's just a straight up stud, and I think that's going to be really interesting. I think that's going to be one of the first tweets we see almost any day that reporters or fans are allowed in the practices, in the bubble, wherever it may be, is Xavier Howard there with the team?
Yeah, heaven forbid, you know, he misses, you know, he doesn't come out in the field with the rest of the team, you know, because of a hamstring, you know, he can't tie his shoe quick enough, has to go to the bathroom, you know, we'll all be speculating. But Jake, I think we can both agree that Xavier Howard's worth a new contract, worth being paid, you know, as the highest paid corner of football. But I mean, we talked about a little bit on this last podcast. Do we think the Dolphins are going to shell out that money for him? I mean, do we think that they're kind of laying, you know, the foundation in place? You know, they're drafting a Noah Igbinoghi. They're bringing in Holland. You know, they even signed Byron Jones. I mean, if there was a team that could believe in their secondary and their defensive system, that they could just plug and play these defensive backs, it would be the Miami Dolphins. So I think, you know, as fans, we understand Xavier Howard is worth all the money that he's seeking. You know, we would love for the Dolphins to sign him, but at some point, you know, the Dolphins have to sign their own. And are they going to shell out, you know, 10, 15% of their salary to an Xavier Howard? You know, that's just a rough estimation here, you know, but that price could seriously go up, that 7%, with a new deal. And are they going to invest that much money in a guy who, again, they might be able to see as, you know, maybe not as prolific as a need as the Dolphins fan base might?
In terms of on-the-field competition, as we segue into our second headline here, is the receiver versus cornerback battles. I don't care if you're closer to field one, field two, or field three, you're going to see something you're most certainly going to want to watch. Whether it's Noah Igbinoghi working with the twos, whether it's Albert Wilson and Allen Hurns having to battle through the twos and threes in order to show that they still belong on this team. And that's why I'm going to bring up this, and it's more of a question when we're talking about headlines. How often is our Twitter timelines, and as a result, whether it's the stories on in the Miami Herald, whether it's the stories on the Finsider, how often are we going to be talking about Jacoby Brissett, right? And I'm not saying he's going to upend two as the starter. I'm just saying when we are going off these practices alone, there are going to be days where Brissett balls out. I have to assume every quarterback is pretty good at their job. So when he's throwing to these guys like Allen Hurns, Albert Wilson, probably Jalen Waddle and Preston Williams a little bit, I mean, there's going to be times where he's going to flash, especially playing against the number twos. And it's only going to be a matter of time before someone's talking about, well, maybe we should give him a shot. I mean, he's still only 26 years old. He's from Miami, blah, blah, blah. It's like a match made in heaven. No, I don't think there's any chance he's going to upend Tua for the starting job. But there's going to be that little snowball that starts rolling about how Jacoby Brissett's deep ball is so incredible and everyone's going to fall in love with it. And that's going to be a pretty tough couple of days, even though it's nice to have a backup quarterback that is not only talented, but I think, Josh, both of you and I agreed that we thought he'd probably be one of the better backups for Miami to pick up behind Tua.
Yeah, and I think the biggest reason fans, you know, weren't really sold on Brissett is because they thought he was going to make a huge contract after getting paid starter money with the Colts. That didn't happen. I'm looking at his career. He completed 586 of 983 total passes, almost 6,500 yards, 31 touchdowns, 13 interceptions. So again, this is a guy who he has had some success in the league. He's familiar with this system. But Jake, to your point, you know, I think that first video, there was one that the Dolphins leaked out just showing off a couple of highlights, the same one that everyone was, you know, bashing to it. Oh, his arm strength didn't look the same. You know, the ball took too long to get there. They were also praising, you know, Jacoby Brissett. I think he completed a pass for Durham Smythe. So, you know, it's already starting. And I think we talked about it when Jacoby Brissett signed, you know, it's going to be a very, very dark day if we're sitting there on game day and, you know, at some point, too, is taking his helmet off, and we're seeing Jacoby Brissett come in the game because, you know, Brian Flores is doing one of those unexpected Brian Flores things. That is the day that I am dreading most on Dolphins Twitter.
Yeah, and it's going to be a little worse because we didn't have it last year. We didn't hear about Ryan Fitzpatrick working with the twos or Tua working with the twos or someone's arm strength not looking all the way right or Tua's walking with a limp. Like, these aren't things we could really rant about. I mean, I think we still did given the context that was available. But in terms of just seeing it and being able to take a picture of it and seeing a bunch of stories of people who were there talk about it, there's going to be a little bit of a narrative behind Brissett, I think, when it comes to him having that one day that's absolutely awesome. I mean, the Dolphins have capable wide receivers from top to bottom, and that's one of the biggest battles going into camp. I don't think anyone's going to disagree there. So I think it's only a matter of time till Brissett gets a little love, and, you know, you can't have Brissett love without a little negative, I guess, thought about Tua. So that's something to keep in mind there. Moving on, Josh, speaking again to the point of last year where we didn't really see what was happening, whether it was Fitzpatrick or Tua working with the ones, how clear is Miami's vision going to be when it comes to planning the running back depth chart, especially the fact we get to see the preseason, we get to see all these training camps and OTAs, we see that Gaskin's been the guy so far. Is that really how it's going to be, or is this the Dolphins just really trying to feel out everything and find their understanding of who should be the starter at running back?
Yeah, I mean, as we've talked about in previous podcasts and as we can, you know, talk about so we're blue in the face, no one truly knows what Brian Flores is going to do except for Brian Flores. But, you know, last year we did see, you know, a little bit of consistency, whether it be starting a Matt Breed or giving Jordan Howard the rocks early on in those games. It wasn't until Myles Gaskin, you know, kind of took over that role and kind of took those carries, made the most out of him and said, you know, you guys aren't taking me off the field. So I think, again, that they probably feel a lot better in Myles Gaskin than they may have last year in a Jordan Howard and a Matt Breed. I mean, we as fans do. I know I do personally. So I think, you know, we'll see how it shakes up. We'll see how these Salvon Ahmeds, Malcolm Browns, and Dokes, how they fit into this thing. But I think heading into this offseason, I think we can all chalk Myles Gaskin up as, you know, being that RB1. And you know, it's more than just a saying to me, because again, last year we saw Breed and Howard kind of become those starters early on. But I think that Myles Gaskin from day one, right out of the gate, is going to be that starter. And Dolphin fans should be a little bit confident in that. And I think the coaches feel pretty damn good about that as well.
And this question, I think we can expand on a little more because it goes past the starter, right? You know, the team kept a fullback last year. Carl Tucker from Alabama is on the roster this year. He's a rookie. They've had Christian Wilkins play fullback at times. You know, we love to see that. But then you look at the team this year. I mean, there's the Salvon Ahmeds, there's the Malcolm Perrys of the world, there's the Patrick Lairds, the cult hero that he is on this roster. So, I mean, Josh, is this a group where, I mean, I wouldn't say it's studs top to bottom, no offense to anyone involved, but is this going to be a group that needs reinforcements, whatever it is, 5, 6, whatever, even 10 weeks into the season, kind of like we saw last year with Salvon Ahmed and DeAndre Washington having to have games where DeAndre Washington, I've said this a couple times, and I still can't believe it, playing 50% of snaps in a game for the Miami Dolphins. I mean, that is not a good stat for the team to have. And Patrick Laird, near the end of the season, he had to have a bigger role, especially when Gaskin was dealing with the virus. And Ahmed, I think it was a shoulder injury at the time. So, I mean, this group, while I do like what Brown, Gaskin, Ahmed does as a 1-2-3, do we have faith that this isn't a group that can, well, just, it's in the realm of possibilities, I guess I should say, that it could straight up bottom out?
Yeah, I have faith that could definitely happen. You know, I think, and you know, you look at what the Dolphins did, they tried to claim a Kerryon Johnson. You know, they have had some interest in some of those other pieces that are available. So I don't think they're done adding to this running back unit. And I think you're right, outside of Myles Gaskin. And again, he only played 10 games last year. You know, there was some health concerns there. I mean, yes, he was on the COVID-19 list, but there was also other issues there. So can he stay healthy can he stay healthy for a full 16-game season? I don't know. So I think, you know, again, the Dolphins are going to definitely be scouring those waivers, seeing if another, you know, premier running back becomes available. And if not, you know, they might go out there and sign one of those vets like a Todd Gurley or Le'Veon Bell, like some of the fan base is absolutely gooing and gone over. But Jake, let's, if you're done with talking about the running back position, we can jump right into our next thing. And it's kind of funny you bring this up because it says, how quickly will we put Jalen Phillips in the Ring of Honor? And, you know, you say that as a joke, but let's be honest. You see that the Dolphins fan base is already, I mean, I thought he was edge one in this class, but you have here, you know, Chris Sims said he would have been right behind Chase Young if this was last year. And that to me is absolutely insane to even think that, you know, Jalen Phillips is on that same tier. And maybe that's just, you know, how I feel about Chase Young. But Jake, how long before he is in the Ring of Honor before is Jason Taylor even in there? Cam Wake's not in, right? I think Taylor is. I think maybe Thomas. I don't even think Ricky Williams is in. So how soon is Jalen Phillips going to make it into the Ring of Honor?
this is such a fun topic to talk about, because it's one thing to understand that whether it's a running back, there are going to be people who are jazzed up about this seventh round pick. I don't want to put Dokes in the spot here, but I just mean it's been this way for years. The seventh rounder, undrafted guy, he's going to be the guy that really turns around the Miami Dolphins based on what he did in the fourth quarter against the Giants in the fourth preseason game. Yada, yada, yada. How did we cut him? This is the worst move ever. On the other end, there's that smoke around Jalen Phillips where all we hear about, this is the greatest guy when it comes to the three-cone drill, to all the practice stuff, all the fundamental stuff you do leading up into the draft and you do without the pads on. Phillips has been absolutely incredible, and no one has said otherwise. Obviously, the injury concerns are the biggest thing, but the 2020 second team All-American has been the king of offseason hype, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I think that he could absolutely be a stud. I want him to be a stud. I would love to have a edge rusher like a Cameron Wake who can come in and be that guy for the next 10, 15 years and not worry about it. But, of course, it's easier said than done. And I think the key here, too, is he's going to be mentioned a lot because he can do different things, right? Whether it's rushing the passer or whether it's just playing as a straight-up outside linebacker. I mean, Van Ginkel was a rotational guy last year. Yes, everyone's saying he's going to be the guy to get more snaps this year with Van Noy out. That might very well be the case, but then the snaps that Van Noy and Van Ginkel, see me try to combine them there, when they played together. So snaps are going to be in that situation. We've heard hype about someone like Duke Riley, Vince Beagle. These are all guys who have not been lockdown starters. So I think Phillips is going to have that chance to see his name up in that ring of honor figuratively very early on.
Yeah, and I mean, fans are literally drooling over the pictures, and I guess that's what we do this time of the year, right? We drool over everything we have an opportunity to, but I mean, you see the photos posted of Jalen Phillips, you know how excited everyone is, and you're right, this is just a guy that just seems to be cut from a different cloth, and it all comes back to, can he stay healthy? I think that'll be the ultimate thing here. If he can stay healthy, he could be, you know, the Miami Dolphins Chase Young, like a Chris Sims said, or the next Jason Taylor. I saw someone say to CK Parrott, you know, this was what we this was like the hybrid of Jason Taylor and Zach Thomas. This was the child that we expect.
Yes,
yeah, this was the child that we expected when Jason married Zach's sister. So again, he was built in the lab, and he's just a different type of pass rusher than what the Dolphins had. But again, he's listed as a linebacker, so they have big thoughts for him. And I'm excited to see where he is, but I think he will be in there before Cam Wake or even a Ricky Williams.
Moving on from something that's a little more positive and that, you know, exciting development. How many podcasts, Josh, and this is there's a storyline to this, but my wording isn't obviously the storyline, but how many podcasts are we going to do once the regular season rolls around that are specifically talking about Miami's issues at center?
I was going to say all of them, but I hope we're not talking about any of them. Because, I mean, I think heading into the draft, we all thought they were going to address the center position. They didn't. And, you know, Matt Skura, he had some success at Baltimore, but, I mean, he's nothing more than a dart throw. So I think, you know, we'll be talking about the running game stumbling and pummeling, and we'll be talking about, you know, the center position probably for most of the season, as unfortunate as that might sound.
For all the great camp battles we're seeing develop for the Miami Dolphins, center is the one, and again, we make it clear on the show, we like to kind of run down the middle, but we don't mind, especially when projecting things, talking in more of a positive light in terms of excitement, in terms of growth, because, I mean, we don't want to sit here and be every position's terrible. You know, what are we going to do? But center, I could not think of anything positive to say about the situation. Behind Skura, there are two guys who were on the practice squad, and Michael Dieter can play center too. Jesse Davis, maybe, I don't know. Overall, Josh, there is no backup plan at center. There is, I don't even know if there's a lot of plan at center. This is the one position that legitimately concerns me, and it's going to start whether it's practice one or preseason game one, where once that, you know, first fumbled snap, once that first bad snap, whatever it may be, first false start, I just don't want it to snowball. Like, it's happening again. What are we going to do? There's nothing going on here. Because everywhere else, especially on that offensive line, it looks like the Dolphins have depth. But I just think center is, I mean, I can't even say this. It's not fair to say center is more unique. But to be that guy in the middle, I mean, even last year with Ted Karras, he wasn't great, but we knew he had experience. We knew he could be that vocal leader at the line and in the huddle. I just don't see the Dolphins having that commanding voice, that commanding presence front and center. No pun intended, sure, on that offensive line at the moment.
Yeah, and I just want to know how much we're going to be talking about the swamp ass towel like we did with Ted Karras last year, because that was all we talked about. I remember he came into camp with his little sweat towel on his butt, and that was kind of the whole story there. But for me, Jake, I mean, I have a quote up from it. It was, I believe, the Miami Herald. It was an 11:15 a.m. update from one of the OTAs, and it says, "Center Cameron Tom, the former Saints backup center, has impressed the Dolphins. Matt Skura, Tom, and Michael Dieter are competing at center." So, you know, Cameron Tom was a name you threw out there. That was a guy that, again, you're hearing in OTAs and shorts. Yeah, you hear he looks good. But, again, you just need to see which one of these guys is going to take on that role. Because, like you said, I mean, Ted Karras wasn't great, but he had that, you know, the vocal leadership, and consistent. He was able to get the rest of that offensive line in order. And we don't know what some of these other guys are, but I was going to make a joke that Liam Eichenberg said he can play center. I know we talked about before, but he also said he's never played center. So I think the Dolphins have a plan, because why else would they completely ignore the position and, you know, not spend some of that lucrative? Because we saw they were actively trying to get some of those big centers in free agency, but they just wouldn't pay the top dollar. So I got to trust that they have a plan in place, but I do think it'll be the story, at least on the offensive side, is going to be how well that center position shapes up.
There's no doubt about it. Hey, I kind of hinted at it at the top there. The next one involves our pair of offensive coordinators. But before we do that, let's take a quick break and we'll jump into that on the other side. So stay tuned.
Jake, it's funny you mentioned hair, because George Godsey and Eric Studswell, neither of the Dolphins' co-offensive coordinators have hair, if I'm not mistaken. But that is going to be the big story of this offseason, is how well the Dolphins' offense, you know, progresses and looks different from one season to the next. We know they got the co-offense coordinators. We know they have all the cooks in the kitchen, you know, having a say in what's going on. So, Jake, tell me what you think is going to be the biggest storyline around George Godsey and Eric Studswell heading into the season.
I think the first thing everyone wants to see is, weirdly enough, something bad to happen, right? Because that's the big question. What happens when the train rolls off the rails, right? Who's going to take the blame? Who's going to point the blame at the other one, right? That seems to be the big concern. And most people have been kind of critical about this approach of using the pair of offensive coordinators. And the main reason why I understand people being critical is, this is new. No team has done this. There's nothing to really compare this to. And for that, I mean, while I understand, like, you fear the unknown, and there are those concerns, especially guys turning on each other, players choosing one guy over the other and then being an anonymous source to the media, whatever it may be, that is a huge concern. But I'm pretty cool with sitting this one out and letting it really develop, because there are going to be people with their binoculars up on the 15th row of the bleachers looking to see who has that call sheet and who's calling it in just during practice, just to get that little idea of who's calling what, who does what better, and things like that. But in reality, this is going to be something we're all going to speculate about until maybe week 2-3 of the regular season. I hope it's not any earlier than that. But I mean, this is going to be a storyline that's going to be 90% speculation until we see regular season games. And I think that makes it a little more of a volatile situation of not being able to really pinpoint what's going on. It's kind of like most conversations we have in the offseason, where we can say X, Y, and Z are happening. Things seem good. Things seem bad. But, I mean, we can spin it whatever way when it's offseason.
And that's going to be the biggest thing, is how this fan base and, you know, the different reporters spin this thing. Because if the Dolphins are going out there not having success offensively, you know, who are they going to blame? They're going to blame Godsey and Studsville? They're going to blame, you know, Studsville if he has the play calls in his hand? Everyone's going to be pointing the finger at the guy calling the plays for the lack of the offense success. So it'll be interesting to see the way it shapes up. It'll be interesting to see the way, you know, this does work. I pulled up a Cam Wolf article from ESPN. It actually says, as of now, there's one co-coordinator situation in the league. The Minnesota Vikings have Andre Patterson and Adam Zimmer as co-defense coordinators, and coach Mike Zimmer calls defensive plays. He went on to say the most recent co-offensive coordinator setup was the 2016 Chiefs with Brad Childress and Matt Nagy. So it has been done before. It has had a little bit of success in the league. We see it a lot in college, but Jake, it's going to be very interesting to see the way this Dolphins offense goes from, you know, sputtering around last year, not really finding an identity, to finding what's best for Tua Tagovailoa and taking the next step in year two.
Speaking of discovering an identity, let's look at number 7 here, and that is who will become Miami's slot cornerback. The Dolphins have a lot of strong slot receivers, weirdly enough, whether it's Waddle, whether it's Allen Hurns. Strangely, with his size, he does actually fare pretty well in the slot. And Albert Wilson, these are guys who can really make someone look goofy really quickly and break a play wide open. Being a slot cornerback is not the easiest thing to do in the world. So, I mean, the Dolphins had three guys, maybe even four, who are going to be in the mix here. And it's going to be one of those things where it's like a neck and neck race where we can go every day. And whichever guy is talked about the most, actually, Josh, I think that's kind of an interesting question, because if a cornerback is being talked about, usually it's a bad thing. In terms of, oh, no, they're getting torched all the time. But if they're not being talked about, it means the receiver's not being targeted. Or you're so good, you're Xavier Howard, and you're being talked about because you're intercepting every single ball you see. But when you look at this group, I mean, you got Nick Needham. Is he going to be able to hold down this job for the third straight year? Does Noah Igbinoghi show some of that talent that made him a first-round pick in the 2020 draft? Or does Justin Coleman walk in and look like an absolute stud? The fact he doesn't have to be that big cornerback, the fact he can kind of lean on the Byron Jones, Xavier Howards, Eric Rose of the world even, and just kind of do, quote-unquote, his job. He could kind of walk in and show that, you know, I'm a veteran, I know what I'm doing, and we're just going to kind of go, I want to get one more paycheck. Or, I mean, Jason McCourtney is another guy there who's in the mix. The Dolphins added him. I think he might be leaning toward the safety, but even if he's plays that type of safety, it's going to be like an Eric Rowe guy who's inside the box, which is what a slot cornerback does. So it's not exactly the same. But if McCourty is kind of being molded as a safety here, like he's done in the last couple of years, the slot cornerback job, I mean, the players are a lot faster and they're more towards that wide receiver end. Your duties are a little bit the same.
I mean, this is probably one of the biggest battles, you know, of training camp. You know, who is going to take over that role? Who's going to walk away with that battle? And, you know, you got Justin Coleman here, you got McCourty, two guys who, again, both have familiarity with this system, both have done it in the past, but they are veterans. You know, they did come in on, what, one-year deals, so I don't know that they are truly in, you know, I don't want to say that they don't have a chance to take that job, but I don't know that they are, you know, they were brought in to be relied on to be that starting nickel. So for me, it comes down to Nick Needham and Noah Igbinoghi. And again, I just hope that Noah Igbinoghi, you know, made enough progression from year one to year two, understands, you know, the NFL game. Things are starting to slow down and he can start to forge that role in there. Because again, we talked about in the last podcast, but if you have Xavier Howard, Byron Jones, and then Noah Igbinoghi at 21 years old, you know, locking down that nickel spot, the secondary is going to go to the moon, and that's the way I see it playing out. But, you know, to count Nick Needham out after everything he's done, that would be a grave mistake. So I think it'll come down to those two guys. Again, I could see Justin Coleman wiggling his way in there because I do think he's underrated. I think, again, experience in the system, and he's been a pretty damn good nickel. But I think hopefully when all is said and done, Igbinoghi takes that spot. What about you, Jake? Do you have a early favorite in the nickel corner spot?
I think I'm going to say I think about six more times, but Coleman is the favorite in my eyes. But I agree with you that I'd want someone like Noah Igbinoghi to win and show that value of a first-round pick. I know cornerbacks, they just take longer to develop, so I'm not going to be super panicking still. But, I mean, having your guys out there, the guys you drafted out there, is really all you can ask for. And if he comes in and plays like that stud, plays like the guy Devonta Smith faced, and where he said he was the toughest cornerback matchup he had in college, I mean, that'd be no doubt the best situation available. And kind of to continue this homegrown conversation, Josh, this is something I'm so surprised nobody's talked about. And this is also something I'm so annoyed that people did this to Von Godshaw last year, asking him when he was in his final year of his contract, do you want to come back? Do you think you're worth this contract? Yada, yada, yada. I feel like that's not fair because obviously every player would like to keep their job. Every player would like to be paid more. So it kind of seemed like the reporters pit Devon Godshaw and the Dolphins against each other. And this scenario is a little different, but I'm surprised we're still not talking about it. And that is Christian Wilkins, who is entering the third year of his deal. The Dolphins are going to have to choose if they want to pick up his fifth-year option, being a former first-round pick. So in year number three, this is where we're really going to realize, does Christian Wilkins become expendable or indispensable in terms of being that anchor on the Miami Dolphins defense, I believe?
Yeah, I mean, we've been talking about Christian Wilkins. You know, some of the fan base has been up in arms about that pick, you know, since it happened. But he plays one of those positions that you don't quite see those huge numbers. You know, 47 combined tackles last year, 1.5 sacks and an interception. I mean, he's not putting up those godly numbers, but neither did Ndamukong Suh, you know, when he was in Miami. And that's kind of why a lot of this fan base never thought he lived up to that contract. But the million-dollar question here, Jake, is he indispensable? You know, can the Dolphins move on from him? You know, again, I think it goes back to just this defense and the scheme in place. I think that the Dolphins could absolutely move on from Christian Wilkins, bring in another guy, plug and play, and you know, be on their way. But I do think that you know, Christian Wilkins is a very talented player. I think his best football is still ahead of him, 25 years old. So I think they'll pick up that fifth option. I think I'd much rather see Christian Wilkins, you know, stick around in Miami. But again, it goes back to the Dolphins probably believing that they can bring in, plug and play whoever they want. But Christian Wilkins is a pretty damn good player, and we can't overlook that he has some value on offense as well.
Can't overlook that he's from Western Massachusetts like me, Springfield native. I mean, that's probably the most important thing we can say about him. He was also used at fullback times last year. And to me, I saw last year a leader, someone who can, you know, shows he was a first-round pick and showed kind of that Brian Flores high level of character that he's been looking for in all his players, right? I think he was always the first one out there celebrating with his guys. He was always the first one to be defending his guys. And, you know, he was just kind of a fun person to have around there. To kind of go back to something I said in a few podcasts ago, the jump from year one to year two is about growth. And then the then on out, it's kind of consistency. How often can you do it? Can you make those strong plays? Can you make those highlight plays more often to prove your worth as a growing veteran? And becoming one of the better players in the NFL. Something I saw from Wilkins I really liked was his ability to kind of get in passing lanes and knock down balls. He deflected 5 balls last year, and I do believe that includes his interception. But this is a guy who understands his strengths and weaknesses and is doing what he can to use them to the best of his advantage. He's not someone who can get through every single double team, but he is also someone who understands that if I'm not going to get to the quarterback, I know where his eyes are, I know where the passing lanes are, and I'm going to do what I can to find other ways to disrupt the play without my hands being on the quarterback. And that's something I really enjoyed about having Christian Wilkins. It seemed like the name's escaping me, but I feel like the Buffalo Bills had two guys on the inside of their defensive line for most of the early 2010s. Kyle something and I can't even think, whatever. But they did things in different ways other than just kind of I blew through the line and I got to the quarterback, because it's never that simple. Or a running back came up the middle and I got him. I mean, that's just not really how it works all the time. And I think Wilkins has done a great job of using what he has to the best of his ability.
Yeah, I had to look it up. I think it was Kyle Williams that you're talking about. Yes. But I do remember, you know, there was those big guys in the middle of the Bills' defense. And, you know, that is what Christian Wilkins is. And again, he's 25 years old. I mean, I'm looking at his numbers. He had 56 tackles last year. You know, he only had 47 this year. He had more sacks last year, half a sack less. But I don't think that anybody would have watched a film and said that Christian Wilkins played worse this year. I mean, you continue to see him improve. And to your point, Jake, I mean, he's 25 years old. At this point, this guy is the freaking seasoned vet. You know, this is the guy that's been around from the beginning. And it's kind of, you know, so maybe that is why he's taking on that role. Maybe that is why you see him running onto the field after every freaking play, because he sees himself as that leader. So I like Christian Wilkins. Again, I think a lot of fans, myself included, probably would have went a different way there at that pick, you know, many years ago. But he's on the team now, and he's one of the better defensive tackles in the league, and I'm excited to see where he goes from here. So if you're good on Christian Wilkins, we can touch on Wilkins. We can jump into your next question, which is, which rookie enters the preseason with the most hype? And Jake, I mean, I'm going to throw that one to you, because there's a lot of rookies to choose from.
This might seem like a repeat, especially after talking about the Jalen Phillips hype, but it's important to see the word preseason here. And that's basically who's going to shine the most in camp, you know, against in the organized drills, basically. I mean, we've already seen the panic of Jalen Waddle maybe possibly fumbling 2 snaps. I don't think we have a definitive answer on if he fumbling 2 punts. We don't have a definitive answer on that. Phillips, the hype is there. Does Holland start to get a lot of hype because he's going to be that starting safety? Does he become that starting safety? I think in order to be the starter, you need to have a lot of hype around you. So is he that guy that we're kind of keeping an extra eye on, who's playing into that second and third quarter as one of those younger guys who need the reps? Does Eichenberg come in and look like a stud at tackle? Does he completely shake up this core the Dolphins have established that includes Austin Jackson, Solomon Kinley, Robert Hunt? Does he shake that up in a good way and prove to this team, you need to start me? I was a steal in the second round. I think that could be an interesting development. We could hear him pushing around Agba or pushing around Jalen Phillips a couple times, and all of a sudden we're only talking about him in terms of being that stud on the offense, especially early in the season after the Dolphins started, I think it was 3 rookies on opening day last year. And then, you know, you could also go, is Hunter Long, Mike Gesicki, Durham Smythe, and Adam Shaheen combined? I don't know. I'm just saying we've seen some players that come right out of the blue, catch fire in the preseason and gain all this hype and attention. So I could even see him making a couple catches or something in a couple social media videos or whatever it may be to prove, hey, you know, you have Mike Gesicki here, but he's in his final year. You got to see what you got in me. Let's see what happens.
Is there an all of the above option? Because let's be honest, I mean, every single time that they post a video of any of these guys, you know, it's going to be this guy's the next Pro Bowler, you know, the next great Dolphin. But to your point, I mean, you could seriously make a good case for any of these guys. I think Jalen Phillips will probably be my favorite because, I was pretty stoked on him before the draft, and he just looks like he's built in a lab. But, I mean, the fan base has to be so in love with Jalen Waddle. And every time, you know, despite him muffing two punts, you know, as soon as they show him catching a toe tapper or, you know, a deep ball from Tua, the fan base will be, you know, losing their minds. So I think it could be any of those guys, Jake. But to your point, you know, when training camp comes around, we're just sitting here and big hard eyes bulging out of our head, and we're just stoked to see what these rookies can do.
And here we go. Let's bring it home here with number 10. We're splitting this into two parts. My apologies if I didn't say it at the top. This will be released Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, whenever the miracle worker Josh.
Should we spin these as your 10 and then I'll do my 10? We'll do that.
Perfect. Yeah, it's a deal for me. So number 10 here, let's close it up here on a very warm Tuesday. And that's the surprise cuts are coming. We're going to start having conversation about guys who shine. And the only way guys can shine is if other people are kind of falling apart out there. And there are going to be some players we don't expect. The Dolphins have strong competition at a lot of different positions. Does someone like Allen Hurns or Albert Wilson kind of force the Dolphins' hand that they need to be on the roster? They've shown that level of consistency. Could someone like Preston Williams get beat out? I'm not saying like I think that's going to happen, but if Williams kind of struggles to get back into his zone, has a couple more drops, and Albert Wilson is looking like that veteran who's been here, you know, but I mean 5, 6, 7 years, it wouldn't be the craziest thing. I mean, we've seen the Dolphins, especially Brian Flores, do crazy things with this roster. Does Brandon Jones somehow play so well that Eric Rowe becomes expendable? Again, these are just random thoughts that came to my head, but there are going to be players that are cut from the Miami Dolphins that we aren't expecting. It's like the draft. When everyone does their mock drafts, everyone does their 53-man rosters. And believe it or not, no offense to everyone, we're all wrong. We're 100% wrong. We're going to have those mistakes. And I'm so curious to see how those develop and how Brian Flores and his staff come to these decisions. Because we've said it most of this offseason. That's how we're getting through this offseason, by saying there are a lot of strong camp battles here. And there are going to be some talented guys who are going to try to be picked up very quickly on other teams after the third preseason game, I'd have to say.
Yeah, I see Twitter talking about a lot today, probably because the Dolphins are doing the joint practices with Atlanta now, but they're saying, you know, are they hoarding these receivers so that when one guy does go down, you know, they can move maybe, like you said, a Preston Williams. I've heard Lynn Bowden's name thrown out there over the last 24 hours. You know, could the Dolphins decide between him or Albert Wilson? I mean, from a fan's perspective, from my perspective, I look at it and I say, okay, you're clearly going to go with the cheaper, younger player, but again, this is a Brian Flores team, and like you said, you know, just because we sit here and say, okay, that makes the most sense, he could go do the complete opposite. So the biggest one that you threw out there, Jake, was Eric Rowe, honestly. I mean, we talked about him in the last podcast, just what he meant as far as covering tight ends, but, you know, he fits that bill, you know, I hate to say it, but that bill of a player that is, you know, very good.
Paid pretty and, well.
Yeah, a veteran leader, you know, plays pretty well, but the Dolphins could have a young guy on the roster they might want to get snaps to, and, you know, they could use that money to sign a Christian Wilkins or, you know, a Jerome Baker or whoever it is. So lots of things that could happen between now and then, but you're right. I think, you know, I don't know, man. Lots of surprising cuts, but the one that won't be surprising and I can't wait for is Jakeem Grant. I hate to bring him down every podcast, but I got to do it. Jakeem Grant, that's the one.
When he's on the opening day roster, I'm just going to put this little clip on repeat and tweet it out every single day. And yeah, like I said with the Williams and the Eric Rowe, these aren't things that if I was to write up a 53-man roster, I'd expect. But that's kind of the point here, that once these storylines get going, I mean, these surprise cuts are going to come, and I think it's going to be hard to stay on top of them, so we're going to kind of do our darnest to make sure that's the case here. But Josh,
just before we go on, could Byron Jones potentially be a? I mean, that could be a move,
more than a cut.
Right, there you go. Yeah, I guess I'd have to look at his contract, but he's one of those guys that I guess I could be with any of these. It could be a move or a cut, but I think, you know, that's someone that you can definitely keep an eye on, because, you know, maybe the Dolphins are having buyer's remorse already.
Yeah, that's kind of the situation. But honestly, I got to say, and I think you said it before probably more times than I have. I mean, I love the secondary the way it is. I don't want any changes. I don't want them trading Xavier and Howard. It's basically turn it into green eggs and ham. I would not, could not. And that's me trading Xavier and Howard nonstop. So that's kind of where I'd fit in. I kind of feel the same way about Byron Jones for when he lacks his inconsistency, I just think of his leadership on and off the field, that I think that's really important for the Miami Dolphins. But hey, you know, we literally just said it. That leadership, it's a business. Leadership doesn't always come in first place when it's a business. But Josh, this is fun. I like talking about this stuff because the whole preseason, this is why I got Twitter, right? It had nothing to do with the regular season. It had nothing to do about screaming that the Dolphins should have been trying Tannehill. It was because these training camp battles, these storylines, they become so interesting when we start to get these little plays here or there, whether it's videos or a couple live tweets, and you can kind of see that vision coming together, and you can kind of put together a couple ideas of what you're expecting, or you could have complete egg on your face. I remember being excited the first preseason game, I think it was 2013, that Bill Lazor went out there and Brandon Gibson was walking around in motion, and I thought the Dolphins were going to blow away the rest of the teams in the NFL. So, I mean, you win some, you lose some, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the story of our life, right? But, I mean, this is literally why we got Twitter. You know, this is why we started writing about the Dolphins so that we could get on here and talk about the little things, you know, Jalen Phillips and how he looks at training camp, or Jalen Waddle making a toe tap. I mean, that's what we're here for. And like Jake said, we're going to be here every step of the way this offseason. So tune in.
Subscribe, review, that stuff helps us out so much. If you have the time to review that stuff, I mean, I check it a couple times a week, puts an extra pep in my step. With the stuff coming, all these questions to be asked, all these storylines are really questions, so we'll have to get a mailbag going soon. But first, I think we should get Josh's 10 out of the way, his top 10 headlines going into the preseason, just so in case we answer any questions before then. You can follow him on Twitter at HOUTZ for Houts. He has a little Mike Gesicki cooking, so you'll have to want to check that out about a little project Houts is working on. I can be found on Twitter at JMiddle94. But Josh, I mean, it's going to get a little slow for the next month, but I think we're going to have a couple things to talk about to make it all worthwhile as we prepare for this 2021 season.
We absolutely will. And as we always say, guys, thank you so much for listening to the Jake and Josh Show, part of SB Nation's Finsider Radio. I'm Josh Houts. We'll talk to you next time.
Fins up. That was Finsider Radio, part of the Finsider.com and the SB Nation Network.
Miami has the Dolphins, the greatest football team. We take the ball from goal to goal like no one's ever seen. We're in the air, we're on the ground, we're always in control. And when you say Miami, you're talking Super Bowl, because we're the Miami Dolphins. Miami Dolphins, Miami Dolphins number one. Yes, we're the Miami. The greatest football team. We take the ball from goal to goal like no one's ever seen. We're in the air, we're on the ground, we're always in control. And when you say Miami, you're talking Super Bowl, cause we're the Miami Dolphins. Miami Dolphins, Miami Dolphins number one. Yes, we're the Miami.